Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, call for a billion-dollar-plus settlement over Bernie Madoff. Wait, what did J.P. Morgan, a reputedly legal investment firm, have to do with the fraudster? We'll explain that today, and that will segue us at the end of the show into The Wolf of Wall Street. Does the film make it easier for the next generation of investment industry crooks, even as it depicts their sleaze? So that is all coming up this morning, but first, some Monday morning politics. Cuomo softens on medical marijuana, and the city council speaker race goes down to the wire and gets weird. Ben Max, editor of the local politics website Decide NYC, is back with us as our first guest this week. Hi, Ben Max.
Good morning, Brian.
Two first names. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Let's talk about Cuomo first. Do you know what's in his medical marijuana plan?
Well, it looks like he's talking about allowing some medical marijuana for some of the most extreme cases like cancer and glaucoma and limiting it very much to a small number of dispensaries. So he's talking about a pretty limited easing, at least at first.
He was opposed to this altogether the last time he spoke about it, which was last year. Do you know what changed? Did he buy a legal joint in Colorado over the holidays and his rheumatism went away, or what was it?
Nothing like that has come out quite yet, but I think one of the biggest things at play here is obviously election year politics. It's 2014 now. The mayor's race and everything else in New York City is over, and now we're going to turn our eyes to the state races. And so he's up for re-election, and then he's also has his eyes on 2016, as we know, in a possible presidential bid. So that being said, I think one of the biggest things at play here is we're talking about poll numbers. And by and large, medicinal marijuana and even recreational marijuana are pretty popular when you look at the poll numbers.
So listeners, we're talking about two things here with Ben Max from Decide NYC. If you want to call in on either one, Governor Cuomo now coming out with a plan. It'll be in the State of the State address on Wednesday for medicinal marijuana in New York State, and the race for city council speaker to succeed Christine Quinn in New York City, the second most powerful position behind the mayor in New York City, as we, of course, change ears here in New York. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And if you're reading the tabloids over the weekend, you know that that city council speaker race, at least in some quarters, is getting extremely bizarre. But with the Cuomo and the medical marijuana, I see that his plan is to issue an executive order with no need for the state legislature to vote. And I think that's not how it has come about in other states. Like the New Jersey legislature did vote just before Christie was elected. And then he had to decide, oh, I don't really like this, but the legislature voted for it. Am I going to go so far as a veto? And he did sign the bill with some changes. But how can Cuomo just wave his magic wand and say, we now have medical marijuana?
Well, I'm not exactly sure about the intricacies of the law in this respect. But what I do think is happening is that, A, he might be looking for ways in which he can say, look, I'm doing this. I did this. Give me the credit for this, which is very much, you know, within his purview to do. And the other thing at play is he very may well have felt out the state legislature about this and realize maybe it's not quite time yet and I don't want a protracted battle over this right now, so let me use what the powers that are at my disposal.
Before we get to the city council speaker race, one other thing about Cuomo and the state of the state coming on Wednesday afternoon. Do you expect to hear about de Blasio and pre-K?
Yes. So news breaking over the weekend is that Governor Cuomo is planning on announcing at the State of the State on Wednesday that he is going to have the funding in the budget for universal pre-K statewide, which is preempting a bit Mayor de Blasio's plan for here in the city.
Wow. I hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah. So many people are saying that all along that Governor Cuomo was against the idea of raising any taxes, especially as he faces re-election and looks at 2016 as well as a possibility. So I've been saying all along, and others have as well, that I thought that they would find a solution to offer the pre-K that Mayor de Blasio wants to offer without this tax hike. And it looks like Governor Cuomo has found that. The question is whether Mayor de Blasio will now back off of his push for that tax hike on the wealthiest earners in New York City.
if he can get universal pre-K. And the other piece of that for him is universal after school for middle school students.
And that I don't believe. I was also commenting on Twitter last night about that. I don't think there's anything in this proposal from Governor Cuomo about funding for middle school, though the reports say it's a lot of increased education funding, maybe up to 5% of a bump on education funding. So the question would be, is all of that money sucked up by pre-K, or is there some money for these middle school after school programs?
So what's the funding mechanism? Because we know the mayor wants to increase the city income tax on people making $500,000 a year or more. That requires the approval of the state legislature, which is why we're talking about Cuomo in relation to this anyway. But does he have an alternative funding mechanism so he can say, I didn't raise taxes, but I gave all the kids pre-K?
He's looking at budget surpluses that they either expected or didn't expect, but he's claiming that the money's in there. He's not, I don't believe, talking about cutting any other programming to do it. I believe they've found money in the upcoming budget where he's saying we can allocate this. One of the biggest questions, of course, from the de Blasio camp is going to be the sustainability of that funding, because you can't ramp up pre-K in New York City or anywhere else and then dismantle it after a year or two. I mean, that would be a disaster.
Right.
So what the part of the de Blasio plan was a 5-year tax increase on these wealthiest earners in the city. We'll see if the Cuomo plan matches up with that and then some.
And we'll see if the Cuomo plan makes this a moot point. But I was surprised to see on ABC this week yesterday, Senator Chuck Schumer, famous progressive, certainly in favor of raising taxes on the federal level when they were debating the Bush tax cuts and whether they should expire, not come down squarely in Bill de Blasio's camp. Listen.
I've supported an increase in taxes at the federal level from 35 to 39. It's a more difficult issue at the state level because people can leave and go to Connecticut or New Jersey or somewhere else. So I've left that to them, and I'm working at the federal level.
Do you support it or not?
Well, I'm leaving it up to de Blasio and Cuomo to work that one out. I have enough trouble at the federal level.
So you're just going to stay out of this one.
You got it.
So Schumer with George Stephanopoulos on ABC. And if Chuck Schumer is staying out of it, if it does come down to a state legislature vote, maybe that's an indication that it's going to be a tough vote for a lot of people in an election year to raise taxes, even not on them, even not on their constituents. If all we're talking about is people in the city making in the top 1%, $500,000 plus.
And I'm really glad you're hitting that point home, because I think that gets left out of the discussion quite often when we talk about this tax increase, that it's about city earners, but it still has to go through the state legislature. So it is about city earners only with the tax increase. But as you said, state legislators are very hesitant to raise taxes on anybody, even those that are not truly their hometown constituents. And even for Senator Schumer, the notion of raising taxes, and maybe this is one of the biggest successes of the Tea Party, the notion of raising taxes anywhere, anytime right now has become a very taboo thing.
Let's take a call on the medical marijuana question. Mona in Brooklyn is calling in. Mona, you're on WNYC. Hello there.
Good morning, Brian. Happy New Year.
And to you.
My question is of both topics, because wouldn't the legalization of marijuana, both for medical and or recreational use, couldn't that be a vital economic engine that would create a large enough revenue stream that we could conceivably lower taxes in many other areas while generating enough revenue for education, anti-drug campaigns, rehabilitation, and preventative measures, while at the same time creating all kinds of businesses. Let's say we use the Amsterdam model, which creates a highly regulated, taxed recreational use, but there's no spikes in usage in Amsterdam in terms of violence or crime. So I'm just wondering if we're, moving in that direction, and if you had any thoughts on these issues.
It's a great question. Somebody, Ben, has crunched these numbers. I don't know if you have. I haven't. Certainly they've done it in Colorado and Washington State, where recreational marijuana was legalized in referenda. And, of course, that just took effect the other day in Colorado, where you actually, for the first time in the United States, can go into a store and buy marijuana. I think in Washington, I remember hearing It's being pretty heavily taxed. Or is it Colorado? Doesn't matter. 25%. A 25% tax, which is both to discourage addiction, overuse, and to fill the state coffers.
I think when you talk about opening up to recreational marijuana, you're definitely talking about a source of revenue. When it comes to medicinal marijuana, I'm not exactly sure how the economics of that work. I do think there perhaps could be an argument that if you're improving the healthcare options available to people with certain types of cancer and glaucoma and such, that it might help bring some healthcare costs down. So you're opening up to different options. I think when it comes to things like recreational marijuana and even what we've seen with casinos and some of these social ills of sorts that people are hesitant about, when revenue can be brought in through them, people start to say, well, maybe this isn't such a bad idea.
Ben Max from Decide NYC, my guest on WNYC as we talk some New York Monday morning politics, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, if you want to get in on it. Okay, for city council speaker, it seems to be down to Melissa Mark Viverito of East Harlem and the South Bronx and Dan Gorodnick of Manhattan's East Side from Stuyvesant Town, Peter Cooper Village, where he's from, up to about East 96th Street. Mayor de Blasio is backing Melissa Mark Viverito. What's the source of the alliance there?
Well, Melissa Mark Viverito, Councilmember Mark Viverito, was a very early supporter of Mayor de Blasio's when he was very early in his campaign and had not garnered the type of attention and backing that he later developed. So a lot of people are saying, hey, she was an early supporter of his. They align very much on many progressive issues, and she has called herself the progressive candidate in the speaker's race all along. And so that A, they align a bit, but also B, that she supported him and now he's supporting her.
Is she much more progressive than Daniel Gorodnick? I was looking at his website and he also portrays himself as a strong progressive with a history of tenant activism and other things. Is he less progressive in measurable ways or issues that you can identify than Mark Viverito?
I think that what Councilmember Gorodnick has shown is that he is not always quick to align himself with bigger groups. He wants to keep some of his own independence, and that's what he's done. And that's also a little bit of a Manhattan delegation thing, as their county is not quite as aligned and under the finger of their county boss. So Councilmember Gorodnick has always shown a bit of want to think things through. He just did this with the Midtown East rezoning. He wants to kind of be his own agent. He has said many times, though, he's very supportive of the mayor's platform, but he also wants the city council to be able to be an independent check on the mayor, which is their, as he says, charter mandated responsibility.
So you could understand why de Blasio would want somebody who's running to be his ally rather than running to be his check. Now, this race, and you mentioned the county leaders, this gets into the weeds in a way that can make people's eyes cross. But a real issue here is about the power of the Democratic Party leaders from the different boroughs versus the mayor. Now, these party leaders are people who most of you listening right now have never heard of. Carl Heasty of the Bronx. Who? Frank Setio, the Brooklyn Democratic leader. And Joe Crowley in Queens, who's a little better known because he's also a member of Congress.
Sure.
But how does it affect the power of these people, who the city council speaker is?
Well, the county party bosses are very much kind of pulling some of the strings on the back end of local politics in those boroughs because they are helping candidates raise money. They're helping candidates with campaign staffing. They're helping their county jobs. They have a relationship with the state party. There's all sorts of internal political mechanisms that the county bosses kind of have their finger on.
And why should the public give a hoot about county party leaders? The public didn't elect them to anything. They did elect the mayor. They did elect the members of council. Party bosses are often the seats of corruption, as you know, or self-serving influence peddling. Why shouldn't we root against them on that basis alone?
Well, I think there's some argument to be made there, so I'm not going to completely argue against what you're saying. But I do think that a lot of this also comes down to organizing. And you want people who are helping to organize political movements, to organize politicians, to fight for causes. You know, one of the things that the recently former Speaker of the City Council, Christine Quinn, was praised for is that she, you know, and sometimes through means that she was criticized for, but she was praised for the idea that she could kind of bring the council together and whip people together and bring order. And that's somewhat what the county bosses do. They're able to kind of bring the council members, in this case, that are in their county together on many things.
Of course, everybody who wields power gets blowback. And in the case of Melissa Mark Viverito, she has both friends and enemies. She's a leader of the Progressive Caucus, which fought Mayor Bloomberg on things like paid sick leave and the living wage bill, higher than minimum wage for companies that get taxpayer subsidy city contracts for their workers. There are about 22 members of the Progressive Caucus who seem solidly behind her. But other people don't like her style, finding her willing to punish her opponents on things, for example, in a vindictive way. But people said that about Christine Quinn. People said that about Rudy Giuliani. People say that about all kinds of people who have to whip people into voting coalitions. So is she a divisive figure in city council more than anyone else?
I think that, you know, we have to be careful when certain things start to be said about elected officials or people running for office or whoever it might be, that once one or two people have a criticism, it can get blown out of proportion. And I'm not sure that that's not the case here with Councilmember Mark Viverito. I don't know how many examples there really are of her turning people off. What I do know, or being vindictive, what I do know is this. There are reports that when the Progressive Bloc did their vote to decide who as a bloc they were going to represent, it was not nearly unanimous for her. That's what the reports say. There's some talk about 12-9, different numbers. Again, I don't—
Even within the Progressive
Within
caucus.
The Progressive Bloc, that they did their vote, and I don't know if it was secret ballot or what. I'm not exactly sure on all the details of that. But when they decided who they were going to come out and back, that it wasn't unanimous. And that, again, speaks to the fact that Dan Garodnick is a progressive. He's not part of the Progressive Caucus, but he's a progressive and he's well-liked. You know, the interesting thing is you do hear some of these reports about Councilmember Mark Viverito and her personality clashing with people. And again, like I said, I don't know how much substance there really is to that, but you hear nothing like that about Dan Garodnick. Almost everything you read about him is positive and glowing, and he has really run this speaker campaign behind the scenes and not as publicly as others have, including Councilmember Mark Viverito.
Now, Mark Viverito says she's already got the votes, that Mayor de Blasio went to bat for her. He got a few of the county leaders in their camp, and this is already a done deal before they vote on, is it Wednesday or Thursday?
Big day Wednesday.
Wednesday,
yeah.
Right. So State of the State on Wednesday and this
speaker
vote in City Council on Wednesday. But there are two other lines of attack that have surfaced in recent days. One is about her real estate investments. Some land and rental condos she has an interest in her native Puerto Rico, and a no-interest loan she got on her East Harlem home in 1998 when she had less money than she does now, and whether she's disclosed all of her rental income. Her critics say she should have given that no-interest loan, which is a government program, given it up voluntarily over the years as she became wealthier, even though we should be very clear, she is not required to do that under the law.
Correct.
And who gives up their no-interest law that they're legally loan that they're legally entitled to on their home?
When she got this loan, she was not making a lot of money. She had wasn't that long out of school, and she was working for, I believe, 1199 SEIU, the union, and she qualified. There's no scandal about that. Some people are saying that with some of the rhetoric that she and the mayor have been touting, that they should be acting on that a little bit more by doing something like repaying some of the tax that she has legally not had to pay, as you said. I think we might be searching for, you know, there's people maybe searching for some things to call her out on.
And there's something about disclosure, that she may have paid taxes on rental income but not disclosed it on her city council income form or something like that?
Right. There's questions about a property that she owns that she's been renting space, and whether or not she declared properly declared the income on that. And that seems to be a pattern among some of our elected officials, which is a little troubling to some.
And the other new line of attack, which I'm going to mention only because so many people probably saw it on the front page of the Post and it was in the Daily News, too, over the weekend, truly bizarre, in which her opponent in her city council race last year has filed a suit saying Mark Viverito put a voodoo curse on her and had a mural of a headless rooster, I'm not making this up, painted on her opponent's building, I guess it is, allegedly an artistic form of a voodoo death threat. Really?
I know. I mean, I'm shaking my head ad nauseum here. I don't know how much credence we want to really, or airtime we really want to give to this, but it was on the front page of the Post, so of course it's grabbing people's attention, and it's just funny, this idea of a voodoo curse. It was part of a community mural effort that the council member was involved with. One of her opponents in a crowded city council race for re-election who did not get many votes is now claiming that the council member, through these murals and this community project, put some sort of curse on her. I don't know how much more you want to discuss on that topic, but it's a sensational story and good for a couple of weekend laughs, I guess.
I guess, you know, somewhere between the New York Post doing whatever it takes to sell papers, especially if they can tinge something, I guess, against the progressive, somewhere between that and religious freedom, there's not much of a story here.
Right. And listen, there is a lawsuit. It's not like this woman hadn't filed a lawsuit. So we'll see what comes of that. I don't know who's going to be footing the bill for these things.
Wait, what's the lawsuit? She's suing her for putting an alleged voodoo curse on her by painting a rooster?
Right. And I'm not sure what the damages are exactly. She claims in the story that immediately after the mural went up, she got a blood clot in her leg, I think was one of the. And again, I don't want to make light of anybody's medical conditions, but a little bit strange, of course, to make that claim. So there's a few things at play here that make you, again, shake your head and you don't know what adds up. But we'll see what happens with the lawsuit.
Well, it's a new era, but bizarre politics will always have a place in the discussion in New York City.
Of course.
So, all right. So we are entertained at least by the end of that conversation. Ben Max is the founder and editor of Decide NYC. And I guess you're really kind of going on to Decide NYS.
We're getting
year,
ready
right?
for the 2014 state elections. Absolutely.
And of course, we'll be covering Governor Cuomo's State of the State address on Wednesday, his medical marijuana proposal, his pre-K proposal, and everything else. So keep tuning in this week. And, of course, we'll cover the city council speaker election, which is also on Wednesday. And we'll see who really does rise to be the second most powerful person in New York City. Ben Max, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, does putting people on Medicaid increase expensive emergency room use? The headlines say yes. Health policy expert Sarah Cliff says it's more complicated than that. We'll talk to her next in this conversation that has big implications for Obamacare. Stay with us.